Hello, everyone. This is Glenda, and Nancy's here, too. We are here for you today, and most of all, Yeshua, the living Christ, is here with you today. So I look forward to getting started. And before I do, I would like to ask a very practical question. Some people are not receiving our mailings that I send out on Saturday night. Nancy did not get hers. And I'm just wondering if there's anyone else that did not receive your invitation today, because I need to take this up with our company if this is a widespread problem. I know it can happen uniquely here and there just because service providers are out or networks are down. You know, it's going to happen every now and then. But if it's widely happening to our people, we've got to take some action for it, because I don't want anyone to miss their invitation. So just let me know on our email line, which is askablessing@christblessing.org. And just say, I didn't get it, or I did get it, or whatever you want to say, maybe just hello. But I'm glad that you're here. And I just want to make sure that everybody knows about it, so that we can have a meeting that helps everyone in our community. So, Nancy, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. I'm really great. Even got out in the sun a little bit today. Got a little vitamin D. Felt so good.
Oh, I know. I know. We are so happy for this beautiful weather we're having in Texas right now.
It's beautiful.
And I think it's pretty much this way across the state.
Yeah, we've been having like a little second summer, but I think it's going to get cooler again. But in that case, it's just nice to get a little dip of sun, because it just perks you up.
Well, yeah. You know?
We really need it. We need it. We really need
we
it.
We do.
You know?
We'll get it. Don't worry. It comes with fall. It's part of the package. You know, I grew, Texas was my native home. And back in the days I was growing up, it didn't cross 100 in the summers very often. It was slightly cooler then. And if occasionally it would get up to 110, and it could every now and then. Oh, my goodness. We all stayed in the pool. But it didn't last like it does today. We are seeing some increasing heat, but we don't know what's causing these various changes. So I would encourage everyone to take measures to protect yourself, stay comfortable, and keep others comfortable as possible. Keep yourself hydrated, and that goes for summer and winter. Keep yourself warm in the winter. You know, our earth, got to remember, and I think this is being seriously ignored and forgotten now, because in this age of technology, people who are at the senior post of technology worry about what they can't control. They think, well, if we just had enough technology, we could control everything. And what we can't control, well, let's just suppress. You know, it's like the earth has literally been forgotten as a living organism. And like any living organism, he goes through phases.
Right.
Phases that are determined by the flow of the oceans, the tilt of the earth, whether or not there are sun flares happening. Oh, my goodness, you know, and how we connect with other parts of the planet at different seasons and so forth. It's a living organism, you know, so are we. And we should know, some days, no matter how careful we eat, we get indigestion. Because our bodies just don't want to secrete the enzymes or the digestive fluids necessary to make it go well. Okay. And sometimes stress, we can blow it off. Other times we get a headache. Yeah. Think about yourself and work with what you've got, because life is a very, very wonderful but also complex situation that's
right.
Not just happening for yourself, but for everybody you know and love, and the entire world, and the planet, and the sun. Let's don't forget adding to the sun, and to the solar winds, and the solar plex, and the magnetic field. But how far could we take this? It's all alive, my friends. It's all alive. And yes, I am a firm advocate of human responsibility for the environment. But let's don't overreact, because it's not, some of this may be something that is nobody's fault. Nobody's fault, including yours. Don't fall for regimens that are really actually designed to manipulate us en masse to gain control. I have an initial precaution against anything that is driven by fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear is probably the most contagious emotion for achieving mob consciousness. If you get enough people scared enough, they can be motivated to do almost anything. That's been a proven fact of history. So I would be afraid and cautious of anything that's being generated to create mob consciousness, especially when the guilt laid upon us is not going to help anything. Now, I want to just welcome you today. I'm so glad you came. And we've got a great new study. Well, actually, it's the other remaining most significant part of Chapter 3, which is called The Wondrous Universe. We opened to that last week and introduced the primary elements from which our universe was created. Love, which is the attracting force that brings all phenomena into a unified, harmonious, and collective performance. Love, first and foremost. And then conveyed by spirit, which embraces, holds, and permeates everything to create wholeness and thereby a universe. And then we need something within all of this that can perform and create. And those are the adamantine particles at the smallest level of existence, the tiniest, unbreakable level of existence, which then accumulate and create larger forms, eventually atoms, molecules, and substances that we enjoy living with as part of material existence. Now, there's another thing that is also part of material existence that we need to know, and it's important enough that Yeshua spent time elaborating on it and touched upon it in important ways in three more chapters. Nancy will probably comment on this as we go through, because she is our... She is our PhD in residence of Love Without End. There's probably no one who has studied it more carefully than she has, so she'll know exactly. She'll probably bring up supplementary information. But I'm sticking to Chapter 3, because right now I want to present the simplest orientation to everything that our reality is made up of, so that we can all be on the same page and I make a reference to this, that, or something else, you've got the easy peasy version of it. And we don't have to get complicated on everything. And there, my goodness gracious, this book, it's not complicated at all because his teachings are so clear and so to the point. But it can be a little bit complex, kind of like a millionaire candy bar. You never know whether you're biting into caramel or a pecan. So it's rich. Let's put it this way. It's rich. And
it's rich.
Right now, it's rich. Okay. And right now, I just want to keep it more like a sugar cookie. And something that's easy to taste, easy to understand. And let's put the pieces together because they all work so beautifully. Now, yes.
I was just going to say, but what's so beautiful is there's so many layers of meaning and understanding that come at different stages. And so the perfect thing is there for each person, whatever part of their growth and awareness is and their consciousness. So it's amazing how much depth can emerge as you grow. And so it's beautiful that, you know, it can seem so simple and then complex and then be simple again. And you know, once you're applying it.
Oh, yeah.
So it, once you're applying it, because, yeah, but it's amazing. He's a master at that, I don't know, magic, if you will. It's just incredible. So.
Oh, it is. And same thing happens for me, too. I'll be reading along in one of the more complex chapters. And I'll say, did I actually write that? You know, It hits me with such a new level of truth that I just fly up to a different level. I think, oh my goodness, I actually wrote that and I didn't know it. How in the world could that happen? And all of a sudden, of course, it hits me. Well, yeah, but I didn't say it. He said it. And sometimes the scribe just writes and that's it. That's enough. Mm-hmm. So for the most of it, I was a scribe. And then in other parts of it, I did some creative writing, especially where my conversation was involved. You know, I wanted to make the conversation very personal and very, you know, interesting to follow. But as far as what he said, I was just a scribe, and I was in such a high place, I probably didn't even know what I wrote most of the time. and that's the way, so it's a new book for me every time I read it. And it's really fun for me to be going through this again. But let's get down to study right now so that we can all move through it together. So after these three parts of the universe, what we have is the world we live in. And the world we live in is really comprised of natural, God-created reality, and the human realities that are layered upon it. But one of the things that holds reality together at all levels is structure. And sometimes we apply a negative connotation to structure because it can limit our freedom. It can make us feel a little bit boxed in and restricted and bound by protocol and, the gotta do's that we have to do in order to get to what we want. And so sometimes we can get a little frustrated with structure and put a little bit of a negative slant on it. But before we get into that part of our experience with it. That's just our experience with it. Let's look at what structure does for us. Okay. Well, first of all, it allows a fabulous, amazing solar system to exist without planets running into each other. Okay. It allows for the rotation of the Earth to provide us with day and night. It it allows for the rotation of the Earth around the sun to present us with the gorgeous seasons. And the events of spring are unique compared to the events of autumn. It allows us to observe and cultivate the different growth cycles of nature. You know, when to water plants, when to fertilize them, when to just let them grow, and when to harvest. It allows us to know when a watermelon is ripe so that we don't cut open a green watermelon. Well, you can tell by thumping it and the resonance you get. Believe it or not, that is structure. Music is taking the sounds of the universe into a rhythmic, harmonious structure. So, mostly, structure is a good thing. And I want to give you some examples of how essential it is and the things that can happen when it's broken down. For one example, structure is basically the boundaries we have in our body and at the outer skin of our body that protects us from viruses floating around in the environment. You know, the mask we all wore for a year really didn't do much good, but at least we were using the principle of barriers to protect ourselves. This is what cellular structures do. It keeps cells in your body from mushing into one another. And a really horrific example of how these structures disintegrating could even kill us. If you miss, you see a little spot of, it looks like a freckle, but it's more than a freckle and it itches. And you get to the dermatologist and they examine it, do a biopsy, and you find, well, oh my goodness, that's melanoma. Oh my goodness. So they treat it in whatever ways they feel are most appropriate. And it doesn't get captured and removed to create, for the tissue around it to create boundaries for it to not spread. And more little spots come up, and next time they're more like little tumors. And they're treated or removed, and the boundaries do not grow again. Soon it mastitizes, and the life of the body is literally at stake. That's a really, really bad situation. Another situation is how a common cold that is not properly treated and restrained can become pneumonia. That's the loss of boundaries. We have within our circulatory system white blood cells that are the armies of our body, and they go out and they attack bacteria or viruses that try to invade our body and disregard the boundaries our bodies have up to repel them. And so we have these little biological organisms that protect us, that are our armies of light, you might say, and life. We have guardian angels that protect us from dark forces that try to inhibit our minds and attack our souls or drain our lives. So the boundaries we have are essential. They are essential when they're in support of life and the living. Now, boundaries are really the love child also of government. And often of big business and often of landholders and greed. I was trying to look for another word, but there just wasn't anything. You know, greed captures as much as it can and holds it against and behind boundaries so that it's not available for sharing, not available for commerce, not available for the rest of life and the living. So structures have been an instrument of control. And there's no question about them being an instrument of control. And we have actually fought against these, but not in the right way. The right way is to understand the liabilities of structure that controls us. According to Yeshua, according to him, structure is a good thing if it is controlled by God and by your heart and your life, your own life force. If structure controls you, then you can suspect something or somebody else is behind that control. Take a close look at it. Structure was created by God to be a servant. That's it. You were not created to be a servant of structure. When you consider what you would be willing to pay taxes for, think about, are you paying taxes to structure that will then attempt to make you a servant of it? When Yeshua was asked about Caesar, he said, should we pay taxes to Caesar? And his answer was, he thought about it for a minute, his answer was, given to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God. We pay taxes to God with our love, our service to him, our generosity to others, especially those others who promote and serve him, through tithing, and through cultivation of natural forces of life. An example would be an organic farmer or people who really care, truly care for children, or care for the aged, or care for the sick. We are tithing to God when we provide a service to any creation of God. That includes animal care, animal rescue, assistance in the environment. When we pay tithes to God, make sure it's to God. We do not need to be overtaxed for structures that will then attempt to make us servants of it. And that's the closest thing I will get to politics in the next month, because it's not safe. It's not safe to talk in that direction. But anyway, it does summarize what Yeshua said about structure. It was created to be a servant of life, a servant of the living, a servant of God, a servant of the bounties of creation. It was the last thing created, which means it's the last in the order of protocol. But for some government or business forces, it's number one on the list. Number one. It doesn't care about you. It cares about itself. And it can lie I won't go there. It can lie ferociously to cover its desires for control. Enough has been said about that, but I would like to go to some of the highlights of this message today. And it's about the place of structure in our world. And I want to start with a phrase that is far more profound than the discussion of structure. I'm not sure even more needs to be said about structure, but perhaps there is. This I do want to say. And we're reading on pages 62 to 64 in chapter 3 of the final edition of Love Without End. And this is Yeshua speaking to me. The seventh day has been greatly misinterpreted to mean that the Creator retired. Nothing could be further from the truth. From that point on, meaning the seventh day, the Creator loves, maintains, and assists by being, not by doing. Resting, not retiring. If you would be like your sacred source, you will learn the secret of commanding life through being love. As you attain that ability, you will rise above structure. The seventh day is a celebration of your Creator's supremacy over structure. Whatever you take into yourself, you harmonize with that principle. Whenever you extend it to others, you are liberating the world from its prison. Now, according to his message there, I would say that being the love that you are is the greatest antidote to the imprisonment of structure. And I went on to ask him, why has this not been told to me before? To which he answers, when structure interprets the Bible, it does so to perpetuate its illusions. When love reads the Bible, it does so to penetrate illusion and arrive at the truth. And he continues, when you speak of structure, certain ideas come to mind. But my understanding, just a minute. That's got to be me talking because he never talked about his understanding. He just simply knew what things were. So let's just consider that I was talking to him. I forgot about those quotation marks that were there. So I was saying, when you speak of structure, certain ideas come to mind, but my understanding may be too limited. Would you mind clarifying for me exactly what you mean by structure? So now he's talking. Structure is an organizational factor in the universe, although a secondary and derivative one. It is love that first brings order out of chaos. But structure implements the durable patterns of orderly arrangement. Love built your home. Structure holds the walls in place. Love built your nation. Structure administers it. Love determines the parameters of right conduct. Structure formulates the laws that enforce it. Like the mind, structure is good if it serves, and tyrannical if it dominates inflexibly, never submitting to the revisions of love. And he continues, structure represents the predictable, agreed upon patterns of existence, which start with simple forms and build up to complex ones. It is patterning that locks in the differences of potential and holds organizational formulas in place. For example, structure is what makes the difference between steam, water, and ice. Even so, the ingredients are the same. But structure is not the will that determines whether H2O will become steam or ice. That is determined by harmonic adaptations to the environment, which is love. All structure is derivative and subject to revision, suspension, or development. You might say that structure is the conservational imprint that allows desirable creations to be stabilized, retained, and combined into larger aggregates of form and matter. Structure is what holds things in place. The way I would illustrate what he just said at that point would be, we harvest from the earth clay and lime, from which we make concrete. And then we mix concrete with stones that have also been harvested from the earth to build buildings, which are also structure, but they're created for our living protection and service, and more complicated structures even come from that, in the sense that inside the building there will be rooms, some for living, some for sleeping, some for eating, dining, some for socializing. So these are the various structures that can develop. But let's face it, a home can be renovated, repurposed, redesigned, some walls torn down, others put in place, windows opened up for more light. So structure is subject to revision and must always be subject to revision. Otherwise, it becomes a prison in which we live. And, you know, there are many, many structural models that are used by a humankind for control. And we just need to know when we're working with them that among the elements of structure, nothing is assured immortality. That was not given the blessing of immortality. And occasionally when I think of structure, I compare it to the save button on a computer. It's a memory that lets us retain and integrate one formulation into another, or bring up a program again in another time and place where it would be more useful. And it's comforting to think that structure is only as important as it serves the ongoing creations of love. And we don't have to negotiate with it. If it doesn't work, we change it. We change it. And we can't make it right. We can't just stay in structure that needs to be changed with platitudes and optimism that doesn't change life or doesn't change a doggone thing. You know, there is a place in life always for being positive, for saying good things, for focusing upon what is good. And in the end, for recognizing what was created that truly is good and can be called good. But idealism as approach to life rarely works because it's created from the human mind. It's not created from the mind of God. God was not idealistic when he created the universe. He was not optimistic when he created the universe. He created it, and he created it, and created, and created more until he could say, and this is good. For God, goodness is a result. If you keep that in mind always, you will never be misdirected by false optimism, by false idealism. We can reinforce this by a number of parables Yeshua gave to his people. He said, if a tree does not produce good fruit, cut it down. There are other trees that you can nurture and cultivate. If the vines do not produce grapes, cut them down. If a fig tree does not produce figs, cut it down. In other words, goodness in God's universe is a result. You look at the results. This is further reinforced in the parable of the talents. A talent, by the way, was a denominator, denomination of money in those days. A little bit more than a penny, but a small denomination of currency. So talents were passed out to a small number of people to see what they would do with them. One person just hid them. He said, well, this may be all I'll be given. I'm just going to save them for an emergency. I'm going to sit on them. Right. Another person squandered them on pleasure. And he said, well, you know, basically, you only live once. Let's go for what we want. Let's just go for what we want. And then, and they had to read, it's in the book of Matthew, and just read what the different people did. But they were all scolded, except for the one who actually used the talents to generate more production. He understood that creating more production is what will bring about more good. And I think it's a good principle to go on in life in general. And this is where we see love commanding the production. We're not here to protect structure. We're not here to keep certain organizations in place and never change the system that's in place. We're here to get good results. And we will be rewarded if we live our life to get good results. You know, I will prepare sometimes for months before I do a live seminar. And I'll walk into the room with a notebook, possibly 2 inches thick, of preparation notes. And I will survey the room, the energy in the room, the people who've attended. And I will remember everything in the book and intuitively select at that point in my consciousness what's most important to present, to open with. I will set the notebook down and probably never open it again because I know that I have to begin with something that is relevant and meaningful to the people who've arrived. Nothing else matters. That's production, my friends. And then by producing, the next thing will come to mind, and through, and because of my vigilant preparation, I'll know what to do with it. I don't have to go back to the notebook. I don't have to refer. I will do the next thing to get results. And people are smiling. They're happy. They're ebullient. They're catching on because why? Not because I'm brilliant. It's because I'm working with them. They're why I came there. The information is background. And I'm giving plenty of space for Yeshua and for the people attending to receive from him. In other words, what achieves the good is what matters. That's what matters in everything in life. What gets the job done is what matters. And this could be applied to a seminar, like I stated there. The same thing on these Sunday lessons. I send you an abbreviated version of what we're going to be touching on, but I feel your energy. I feel my energy, and I have to look at what's going to make the greatest impact of what needs to be communicated. And that's where we go. You know, I have had very few hairdressers in my life because most of my life I wore my hair so long, like down to my waist. My mother could cut it or my sister could cut it, and that's all I needed. But at one point in my life, I decided to have the pleasure of a hairdresser. And I remember starting out with, she would ask me the idea, and I would give her an idea. And she said, and it never ended up looking like that. It always looked great. And she said, well, when I got into it, what you wanted would have looked terrible on you. And I kept looking for stages of evolution in the haircut that were going to look terrific on you. That's what I'm talking about, my friends. You invest your time and your talent to get the results you need. And for that, you really do need to be skillful. And you need to employ people who are skillful. You don't want to go to a hairdresser who just got out of school and is really just wanting to make $10 an hour and go play cards. You don't want that. You know, I shouldn't be critical because that's a starting point for somebody. But it does make a good example for the point I'm making and the point Yeshua made about the talents. They have to be used for production because that reflects upon the orientation of God, your Father, creating this universe. And he didn't stop with any phase of it, until he could look at it and say, that is good. He didn't speculate. He didn't say, okay, it's the ideal that really matters. If we don't get it, well, that's okay. We had a great idea. That's not God. That's not God talking. Okay? You got to get the job done. And we have many, many structures I could talk about, a few that might be inflammatory, so I'll stay away from them. in pursuit of a loving consummation of our work today, but we're not quite there yet. There's a few more things I want to say. Let's see. Okay, well, we went through the renovation of the house. Okay. Well, the last quote that I brought to you today, I'll just read it, and then we can extrapolate a little bit more, and if you want to say something, we'll just open the board and you can share your ideas. The children of God were created to harvest his true wealth, which is love. You are both his harvest and the instrument of his harvest. You are the child of his love. So the same is true for you. And this is how you build your material wealth as well. You plan with structure, then you build with it until you can say this is good. You sell it and make a profit to use for something else. If you never become attached to structure, the wealth will continue to build. Structure is the illusion that blocks your attainment of ultimate wealth, spiritually, intellectually, and financially. You must release the illusion in order to attain the truth. That's a big statement right there. big statement. And I can comment a little bit. It's not really how I want it to extrapolate, but maybe I need to. In the material world, which we all live in, until it's time for us to go to a better place, or create a better place here. Anyway, the point of this is that we don't always see the truth. We try. We do our best to tell the truth. But most of what we observe and report in the material universe are facts. That's about the closest we come. And I think it's a very interesting correlation that there's a commandment about that we have taken for truth. In fact, it found its way into our judicial system, and not in a bad way. It's essentially a good. You swear on the Bible to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Well, my dear ones, we don't know what the whole truth is. And we don't know what nothing but the truth is. We don't know. And I'm not sure how to revise that from a legal perspective, but I will say this. In the Ten Commandments, we are told. What are we told? Nancy, you want to say the words?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You want to say it or you want me? Huh?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. Which part? What did you want me to say about the Ten Commandments?
Oh, the one about being a true witness.
Oh, to not bear false witness against your neighbor. Is that what you're talking
yes.
about?
Yeah, the essential part of it is do not bear false witness. And, of course, everything is your neighbor. It doesn't say truth.
But
we
it
does not say truth. It says witness. Okay, what does witness refer back to? Observation. In
yeah,
other
don't
words,
bear,
don't lie.
Yeah. Don't be innocent.
Don't lie.
Right. Tell the truth.
No, you can't know the whole truth, Nancy. You see what I'm saying here?
Well, but you
but
can
you
know.
Can.
You can
bear false witness. In
yes.
other words, you can lie.
Right.
Okay. You can exempt someone from consequence of the law by saying, no, that car was not speeding in front of my house. That's bearing false witness.
And the truth that sets us free for me is like knowing that I'm loved, knowing that structure is a servant,
yes.
knowing that I can't find God in structure.
This whole book is a process toward discovering truth. But you're not going to be called into court to testify on that. You're going to be called into court, if you ever are, is to be examined for your reliability as a witness. We are here to witness sequentially that which we observe. And sometimes we get in trouble for being an honest witness.
Yeah.
I'll give you a couple of historical examples. Marco Polo went to China. Against all odds, he made it there. And he had a very comfortable and enriching experience in China. He brought back lots of benefits he discovered, including the spaghetti that we eat so profusely today in the Western world. Okay. And unfortunately, gunpowder. he brought back a lot of things that at first were received with curiosity and surprise and wonderment, a lot of exaggerated responses. But in the long run, he lived his life in prison because he told the world that this country exists on the far side of anything we know about. He was imprisoned for that.
Sounds familiar.
Galileo. Yeah.
For now,
Galileo.
Because
Galileo. Okay, so this is an important thing to discuss, my friends, because it does tie in with where structure will defend itself against the truth.
Right.
Okay. The culture of Italy was, which was structurally conceived and maintained, was more important than the truth about somewhere else in the world. It couldn't receive it. At a certain point, it had to say, no, this is in violation of the culture we've built. You go to prison, so you won't talk anymore. The same thing happened to Galileo. Galileo discovered that the sun does not go around the earth. We are not the epicenter of creation. We, the planet, rotates around the sun. Well, he was in prison for that. His life put in, literally in jeopardy for that. You're not supposed to say those things. Okay.
That theme is recircling.
Oh, it's been here forever.
It's been here forever, Nancy.
And I'm getting to the point where structure can actually be the villain.
Yeah, you can lie in society and be protected, but you can, if you tell the truth or the truth as you see it, you could be censored and vilified and, you know, not protected by the structures in place. So therein reveals, well, therein reveals, you know, when you were talking, all I kept thinking of was, what did he say? The greatest among you is the servant of all. And it's like structure works best as a servant. That's it. You know, it's.
Yes. And as a servant, it's fantastic. It's not just fantastic. It's essential. Okay.
Right.
But when a whole system of a culture has been so entrenched that it's convenient to maintain it, even if it doesn't work, and will be villainous to keep it from changing, you've got a very bad situation. And that has to be addressed, because good platitudes will not make it right. The only thing that will make it right is, does it work? Does it work? When people discover new cures for a disease and they work, they become often suppressed because we have to retain the structure of the pharmaceutical medical industry. Peace is not negotiated when it could be negotiated because we have to maintain the military-industrial complex. Okay? So instead of negotiating peace,
right,
we sit around the table and make decisions about who do we want to support to be the winner. In a war, my friends, there are no winners. The only winners exist in peace. And I think I'll leave it there as my gratitude and blessings from Yeshua for you. The only winners are created in peace, as peace, for peace. There is no winner in any war. Therefore, the military-industrial complex is the most useless waste of money in our country.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that, Glenda. It's important that we hear this because it's absolutely true. I would say that's a great
truth.
Well,
it is.
You know,
well, it is.
True.
And we run into the same thing with other organizational systems that may have once served us beautifully.
Right.
My goodness. You know, I have a dear friend in Nigeria who runs our little church over there. And he has a degree from college in, well, it seems silly over here. It's a home economics. You know, most people go into home economics here for lessons in cooking, et cetera, et cetera. Well, over there, it's the study of food and, hygiene and sanitary conditions, because he wanted to work for the equivalent of the FDA over there. And he's told me many things about how much they necessarily need something like the FDA, because you can create any form of snake oil and sell it to people. It does them no good. In fact, it may cause great harm. There is no supervision of what is sold over there as a medicine. Food is not supervised for its content. And he really wanted to work in, and he is not one of these controlling people who pushes structure above people. And once upon a time, our FDA was a godsend. Really, I mean, it created the need for labeling, for the use of, well, for the elimination of toxic content and the correct labeling so that we could actually see what we were eating or putting on our bodies for medical purposes. It was essential and benevolent. But at a certain point, it became involved in the big money game, where it cost multi-millions of dollars to have a drug approved. And because of that multi-million dollar investment, then new discoveries of drugs that can't be financed are suppressed. So that's, I think, an excellent example of how structure can serve us beautifully up to the point where it becomes the boss. And most of the time, when it's become the boss of a system that is run out of control, most of the controlling parties are anonymous and unseen. They're not able, we can't make them accountable. And if we try to make them accountable, well, we all know how hard it was to pin the tail on the donkey of Dr. Fauci.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, but when we studied those patterns and those relationships and how all that happens and came to be, if we don't get it back to equilibrium and health, it can implode, it can harm, and it can do all these things. So the correct, you know,
that's exactly right.
You set the priorities, yeah. And we understand what I always love that I love without end. Boy, that consistency with the other to always have correct priorities and understanding how life works and seeing how when it's not working. And so when it's not working, we look at those elements with innocence, which will then reveal all the misconceptions and get back to our heart and understand where it went wrong. And we have to admit that. Otherwise, you know, we become powerless and it becomes this chaotic free-for-all, which is not workable. It's not sustainable.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then we can have too much reaction on the other side of the equation to where we get to where, well, who can you trust? You know, And I want to apologize that if anything in this discussion brought us down to a level of uncomfortable reality. But we needed to discuss structure because it is the fourth leg on this table that comprises our reality. And structure was essentially created by God, but humanity also has a formative involvement with it. How we build it, how we use it, and how we refrain from correcting it when it needs to be corrected. So we let structure run the show and don't even know who's in charge. And who's in charge is probably dozens and dozens of unseen forces that are just wanting to perpetuate the structure. So we're in a predicament worldwide with that right now in so many levels.
Well, I thank you, Glenda, for bringing it up. And those subjects are important to talk about. I certainly know yesterday when he was on planet Earth talking to people back and, you know, walking on this Earth, he had to bring up these things. He had to, you know, expose some of this in a real, sometimes it's not comfortable, but we still have to look at it.
It's not. And I try to respect as much as I can to the fact that we as humans don't see all things. We can't see the truth. What we can look at are the facts. What we can look at, does something work? What we can look at, is this inhibiting life? Is it creating life? Is it helping people? Is it not? So we can look at the facts. That's what we can see, which is why that particular one of the Ten Commandments was all about being a fair and honest witness.
And
we are God's witnesses on the earth.
And that's a freedom, right? We have, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is a great freedom we have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
we can go through so much. Yeah, I think I'll open some lines, Glenda, if that's okay, because I thank you so much. It's
sure.
It's a wonderful.
We pulled in a lot of people on this one, didn't we?
Yeah, that's really good, though, because it's a time for us to pull together our hearts and our understanding. So I'm going to open up Caroline.
Absolutely.
Caroline, welcome, Caroline. We're happy you're here today.
Yes, well, thank you. What an amazing discussion about the one truth being the love that you are, and that a lot of structure is the route to illusion. Amazing, amazing. I always have to think about rereading Love Without End because almost every page is a wow for me, I have to say. And
it is.
You do these quotes, and it's a while since I read it, and I think, wow, that is just so true. That really hits a nerve. That's really resonating. So I just thank you for this new format where you're going through and reminding us how amazing that book is, basically. But you are the interpreter. I don't know you're the vehicle. I think without you, it wouldn't be anything like it is, you know. So I'm so grateful for what you've done, Glenda.
Well, I was the witness. Okay. I was the witness. And I strive to be a good one.
Well, you absolutely are.
And that's not to say that I can comprehend all the truth I listen to. But I learn as I go. And every time I go back to the book, I see something new, which is amazing.
Yeah, hear, hear. That's exactly what happens. So I'd like to ask for two blessings today. One is for my sister. Again, she lost her husband a few weeks ago, a husband of 50 years. And they had a, you know, up and down relationship. They didn't always have a great thing going, but now she is completely bereft and very lonely, you know, in some ways almost suicidal, not feeling like she wants to go on without him, and having some financial issues just because of the structure of how, even though they were very wealthy, but he didn't really set things in a way that was easy, you know, once he passed. So it's things are a little bit of a mess. So she needs some blessings. She needs some help because she's going through a very difficult time. You know, she's been able to live a very materially high kind of life with a lot of expensive holidays and that kind of stuff. And now she's sort of, it's like she's been dropped from a great height, and her life is very difficult. So I would like to see her come out of it, to get through the grieving, to see that there is light at the end of the tunnel. That's really what I would like. I have another less important blessing that I want to ask for, but that one is the main one.
What is her name?
Her name is Josie.
Josephine.
It's Josephine, but it's short for we call her Josie.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And she lives in London.
We will remember Josie.
Yeah, she definitely needs to. And she has no spiritual practice. She doesn't believe in anything after death. So that kind of makes things worse in a way, because a spiritual practice is what often brings you through these kinds of difficult periods.
Yes, yes it does.
Yeah. So
perhaps she will find it as a result of this crisis.
That would be good for her. It would be very good for her. Yeah.
Exactly.
It would be very good for her. So the second is that I'm back in the place where in California I was here for my younger son's wedding, and they're staying in my house in a sort of apartment type setup. But it looks like a bomb's hit it. They have stuff everywhere. It's a complete mess, and lots of stuff needs to be sorted and got rid of and all of that. So I'm having some, it's been a little bit of a challenge trying to get them to deal with that, because, it's like there's almost no floor space. It's not covered in boxes and stuff and furniture that we need to get rid of and, discarded stuff from the wedding, and so I'm hoping that we're going to see through that and be able to clear this out to have some more of a clutter-free existence here in this place in California where I am when I'm in California. So that's it. That's not. Yeah. I don't want to get into an argument with his new wife, because she's created a lot more mess and clothes and makeup and all kinds of toiletries everywhere. It's just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. But anyway, I want to be able to find a way to clear everything out of here, to have a little bit more of a pleasant environment.
Good. Good. That will help.
Yes.
It'll actually help her too.
Yes. Yes.
Order is
Dominic
a good thing.
Christina, the name.
Order is a
Absolutely.
Good thing. Yes.
Yeah, and we're giving away things.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You and all of
thank
you.
You.
And thank you.
And thank you for everything
for
you
being
do.
Part
and that's
our community.
Yeah, I wasn't on the call last week because the wedding was taking place.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Okay. Well, we missed
you. Yeah. Okay.
But,
well, I love
well,
you all. And. Yeah, and thank you again for all that you do. I'm very, very
thank
grateful.
You. Okay, Caroline, we love you. I'm going to open another call with Glenda. We have, we've got, is it Danny or Daniel?
Hello?
Hi there.
Hello.
Your line is open.
My telephone account is in my brother's name. My name is Joseph.
Okay, hi, Joseph.
Hi, Joseph.
Yeah, I have called previously, but today I was reading the passages from the book, and it reminded me of when I first came into this life, I just wanted to love and be loved. It's, you know, I just couldn't understand why other people didn't live their lives that way. And as I grew up, I got confused, because people had such a different opinion about what love is. So I began a quest to know what it is for me. And after years of searching, I have experienced the blinding light of pure love. It's more of an experience than, and it's indescribable. And I feel blessed having had those opportunities. For some reason, I am in a position now, although I've witnessed love healing a lot of people over the years in my work, I find myself having some kind of blockage in my body that perhaps unresolved emotions that I'm not quite getting in touch with. And my health and well-being is declined, and I would like to experience some of the love that I've experienced in so many other people's lives, and I'd like to experience that in my own.
Oh, God bless you. And yes, we will hold you in our hearts for that. What kind of work do you do?
I'm a therapist, and I think you remembered me last time I called by my voice. I'm a spiritist. I've been ordained back in 2012, and
yeah,
I kind of work in the shadows a little bit because none of my clients know that I am ordained, and I usually speak with them on their belief system and their terms and their understanding. So
That's why.
Anyway, that's who I am.
Oh, okay. We will pray for you to be showered with holy love, that you may find it in your life and renew your vocation of being here to serve others in the name of love.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate that.
Thank you, Daniel. We're so glad you're here today. Or Joseph, I'm sorry. Joseph, right? We're going to open up Susan's line now. Glenda, hi, Susan.
Oh, come on. Hi, guys. Hi, Nancy. Hi, Glenda.
Hey.
I can't thank you for what you... How are you?
I'm doing amazingly well.
I'm great.
Good, you sound it.
How are you?
Good, you sounded too. Really good. I've been listening for a while, but you know, I haven't felt that urge to. I have to share, of course, until you guys were speaking. And I love what you shared. Certainly, it takes courage to say things that are uncomfortable. I have my difficulty with that. And in an instance where I was with a few friends, I wound up not answering her in a way that was exposing her. And oh my God, when I got home, I just, took that up and I said, okay, did I do something wrong here? I mean, this was me, talking to God. And, I know that I've been doing this work and it's given me a great deal of power, but I'm concerned about, I don't want to abuse it. And I'm careful, one of the things would be to expose somebody when and I said, did I do something wrong? And the answer came is no, you did not. This has been going on for a while with her and you just took an important stand. I went, oh, okay. Because if I did something wrong, I needed to know about it. The last thing I want to do is, abuse my power. And so, while you were talking about, I could feel the difficulty in, what's uncomfortable and what isn't. And sometimes, Susan, it has to be said, and it can be at times uncomfortable. And so I related to that. But with regard to health and the pharmaceuticals, so I went to a wonderful doctor who diagnosed my leukemia. And right away I said, oh, do I have to have chemo? And he goes, no, we can wait. You will eventually need it, but we can wait and we can monitor you. And that went on for a number of years. And he was extremely supportive, a brilliant guy, a good guy. I loved him. Then all of a sudden he had a study and he was pushing me to do this study, and it involved chemotherapy. And I, my attitude, once he told me I can wait, was I was going to wait and wait and wait. That was it. And for as long, I said, you tell me when I, you know, by my blood, when I can't wait any longer, fine. But until such time, I want to wait and I'll do what I can do on my end and blah, blah. And he, I sensed that he changed, you know, all of a sudden his study became more important. And I was annoyed, mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. But I didn't, of course, didn't get into it. And then he was, I felt it that he, all of a sudden, he wanted to give me names of people. They're very happy with this whole thing, blah, blah. So, he's leaving and he went back to, you know, from where he was practicing at this, you know, where I go for the cancer center and so forth and the university, whatever it is, you know, in Hackensack. And he was going to his alma mater in U of P. And at that time, I'll never forget, he said to me, Susan, he said, just before he left, right, you can go, there's a pill that you can take. And it was only used for people who had chemo, but it was coming back. It's never been used for people who haven't been treated. You can take that pill. And that's what he told me just as he was leaving. Isn't that interesting? And sure enough, with the new doctor, I mentioned it, and 6 months later, I'm on that pill. And by the grace of God, and, you know, in the number of years, it's, what, 3 or 4 years? I haven't touched chemo. But, you know, people have their agenda. I'm not mad at him. He's a brilliant guy. But people have their agenda. And it may not be mine. So, you know,
yeah, that's it.
It's so much when it comes to, you know, that's it. There's really nothing more to say except that, you know, structure. I love what you said because I forget how good structure can be. And I need to be reminded of that, how important
absolutely.
It is. But lately I've been seeing so much darkness that I needed to remember that. And bless your heart for everything you do. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, thank
love
you,
both
thing.
And everybody
and,
on
and
the call.
Yeah, and I love hearing your voice again. Come on the line more often. We love you.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Susan.
I will. I've been feeling you. I've been doing some work, and I can feel your connection to me. Just incredible. Incredible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Great.
Well, we love you. You're in the blessing today. And I'm going to open Sarah's line. Sarah, welcome.
Well, aloha, Glenda and Nancy and beloved community. This is Sarah sending love and blessings. And I want to ask for a blessing for myself, really related to, of course, to what you were talking about structure. And I download what Caroline shared, similar to that, it struck me that, so just briefly, I left my home in California 2 years ago just to go visit my dad. And when I got to Massachusetts, I said, I can't leave. You know, and you all know that I've been living with my dad, taking care of him. So I came back to my home for the first time in 2 years in California. And, it's just so, I just need a blessing of even just understanding the structure. Like, I'm so confused, like, who was it who lived here before? And, you know, is that the same person? And it's just so just confusing almost to me. And then I have two lovely tenants who are living and caring for my home. But it's just so odd to be in my home, but it's not really because now it's their stuff. And I don't know where my place will be. I do know right now that my place will be with my dad for the rest of his life. But just a blessing that I can settle down and just discover the structure that is meant to serve me and so that I can serve God to the best of my capacity.
Okay. Well, Sarah, your love is your home.
Yeah. Yep.
Your love is your home. And then the structure that love builds is the structure that supports your home.
Yes.
So, you know, things change in the world. And sometimes, you know, we have to redesign almost everything. But your love is your constant, okay?
Oof,
and you build
so
your life around your love, and you'll always be home.
Right.
And we will bless you with that today.
You know, and you're such
we
a free spirit
that,
you know, I love hearing your voice because you're always, you know, you're that, you're not attached to those things, and the attachments are the things that sort of hold us down with structure and being willing to be like, I'm going to be with Dad and I can just move to that next thing where I'm called to be. It's kind of freeing, really, you know, because it's not holding you back. So bless you.
That's it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, Sarah.
Bye-bye.
Many blessings.
Okay.
We'll be good
to you.
Thank you. We have Ken's line open now. Hi, Ken. Welcome today.
Oh, hello, Nancy. Hello, Glenda. It's just a delight to be here and to hear this really interesting talk on structure and how love interfaces and interacts with structure and how to do these things. So it's really quite interesting. I have a question and a blessing request. So first, the question is, when one is reading a book, and that book might be the Bible, a lot of times I kind of look at the Bible as being a book of structure. It was inspiration when it was written. It's been hopefully inspiration as it's progressed through time. But it's kind of this interesting mix of structure and, I don't know. I'm not really sure what it is at this point. So do you have any thoughts in terms of how to look at reading that particular book with the understanding that love is the source and that structure is what we're looking at, and how to distill the true meaning and essence out of it?
Well, again, that is that could be a seminar in itself. But my short take on that is that these were conveyances believed to be divine that were recorded for posterity for the fulfillment of, let's say, the highest potential in humans. And as it got passed on through the ages, well, it was translated through many languages. That's one transition that it went through. And it passed through the governance of religion. In the beginning, of course, Jewish, and then Christian. And parts of the Bible are really make up some of the theology of Muslims and have been also used in, different free-form versions of the Judeo-Christian heritage. But they are, insofar as they're embodied in heritage, we have a great mixture of orientation when it comes to the Bible, because some people do not want their heritage messed with, and they're afraid of anyone reading what's really there, if that makes sense. It's a little bit dangerous to read the Bible and take a look at what's there, actually there. Because it might interfere with the perpetuation of a heritage. It is, it's not just a divine book scripted honorably by righteous people inspired by God. It's not just that. It's a piece of culture. It's an instrument from which culture was created. Literally, from the time people could read and write and had a Bible in their own language, it was probably the only book anybody ever read. I mean, I'm serious. It was probably the only book. Most families had a Bible. And that Bible was passed sometimes to five generations of people with the whole genealogy of a family in the back of that Bible. And that Bible is supposed to mean today exactly what it meant for great, 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 great grandpa. But he came across the prairie in a covered wagon. And today we look at the moon and reminisce about when a man actually walked on the moon. And we look at it and we think, those are just childish stories. I mean, how could anybody really believe that? Well, what we have to do in order to read the Bible the way it was written is go into the heart. You've got to go into your heart. You cannot read it with your mind. The mind will be so annoyed with what it can't control that it'll throw it in the fireplace. And that's what a lot of people have done to the burning Bibles. That's what they've done. And whole cultures have burned Bibles. That's one of the first things the communist countries did was to burn the Bible because people would obey it instead of the power regime. So it's too confusing to the mind. If you don't read it with your heart, you'll never understand it because it's been through too many generations of what we can just summarize as external reality, cultural reality, national reality, religious government. And for, during the days of the Jewish, I don't know if we could call it, the Jewish nation, and I'm not sure really what the right word for that is, but anyway, the Jewish people as a nation, the Torah, which is the background of the Old Testament, was controlled by the rabbis, the priests, by the sacred people who told people what it meant. And then in the early days of Christianity, when we took the scripts of the apostles and combined them with the Old Testament, which came from the Jewish scrolls, well, only the priests had any, well, there weren't books, it was all in a scroll initially. And then even once there were books, they were hand scripted and in languages that most of the people could not read, if they could read, but most of them couldn't read. So they had to trust what the clergy, whether we call them priests or bishops or ministers or rabbis, what the clergy said they meant. So they were subject to the governance of people in authority. And the people in authority said what they meant. And probably everyone who's in our congregation has heard me iterate and reiterate that Jesus was not his name. And the changing of that name is an example of the lineage of the Bible and the many evolutionary stages it went through. For example, the Bible was printed during the first Bibles that were ever printed on a press. It was during the time of the Reformation. And the Church of England was declaring at that time its independence from the Roman Catholic Church. It did not want to be controlled by the Pope or any of the ministry that extended from the Pope through the Church. It wanted to declare its independence. So it translated the Bible into English, and it was preparing itself to print, and decided that it needed to have a name unique to the English language. And that's when the name Jesus was adopted. That Jesus never existed before then. It had never been spoken. His family never spoke it. His apostles never spoke it. No one ever. And it was not in the ancient Bibles. So his name at that time became Jesus. Well, that was the Gutenberg Bible, and other Bibles printed after that became the handbook for living of people, Protestants initially, because the Catholic Church did not advise its congregation to read the Bible independently. They felt that it would be misinterpreted by the people. So it was mostly the Protestants at first who had the Bibles. But they created everything we know today from their interpretation of the Bible and the name Jesus. Now, the one thing they messed up on, well, I don't know if it's the only thing, but one very clear thing they messed up on was the name that God told Joseph to name this boy, his son. He said his name shall be Yeshua. Yehoshua ben Joseph. Yehoshua meaning the name of God. Ben meant in the family of Joseph. So God was honoring Joseph as the earthly father of Jesus, the one we call Jesus. Yehoshua, the name of God, shortened to familiar form, is Yeshua. And Yeshua is what everybody called him when he walked on the earth. But Yehoshua ben Joseph was in the book of Matthew. God's orders to Joseph for his name. Well, that was preserved even after they created the name Jesus. It was still in the Bible. When I was a girl and read the Bible, that's how I know, because when I was a little girl and I was reading basically the Christmas story, and I would read that passage in my family Bible. Well, my family Bible came from several generations before. It was a really big Bible. You know, one of those, the binder's about 5 inches thick. Yes, it was printed on very thick paper. Not the super thin paper that we have in our Bibles today. Well, I went to look that up not too many years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago, and that passage has been changed to Jesus. You shall name him Jesus. And I went, what? You shall name him Jesus? Well, I looked this up. I did my research. Well, there was a large Bible conference in the early 60s. It was agreed by all the modern translators of the book that we needed to be uniform in his name, because people would misinterpret why God said his name was Yehoshua ben Joseph and we call him Jesus. So we just have to conform, and they put Jesus there. So that's a perfect example of how human conformity, which is another form of structure, my friends, overtook and dominated even the instructions of God for his son.
Wow.
So, yeah, and that is historically confirmed, provable. You can check it out for yourself. Now, if you pick up any translation today that was printed after that conference, it will say Jesus. But if you have access to a Bible that was printed in, even the 1930s or 40s, I think even the early 50s, it was still Yehoshua ben Joseph. So I've searched online. I can't find any of the new Bibles that have that, but I have my family Bible. That's my confirmation. And I've discussed this with other people in the ministry, and they say, well, yeah, you know, we had to compromise on something. And I'll say to them, well, why didn't you compromise in the other direction and start calling him Yeshua? This is actually what Mel Gibson did in his Passion of the Christ. If you notice, all through the movie, he was called Yeshua. And this is what it is now becoming a revision of truth. A revision of content in favor of the truth, let's put it that way. His name was Yeshua. And this is why the second book I wrote, forwarding more messages, is called The Keys of Yeshua. By that time, I couldn't call him anything else. He was too much my friend, my Lord, my leader, my inspiration, you know, and I couldn't equate his name with anything but the truth. So that's why I call him Yeshua. But, you know, at the time, he appeared to me in 1991. I didn't know him as anyone but Jesus. And so I called him Jesus. And it's okay. It's okay if you call him Jesus. It's all right. His name has been translated into every language of humanity. And what's important is that you get the love behind the name, is that you get the mastery behind the name. You get the person behind the name. After all, what's in a name? You know, a rose by any other name would smell the same. And so I just think of him as, you know, the rose of his mother's womb and the Son of God, and I call him Yeshua. But that's a long-winded explanation I can give to you to read the Bible with your heart. Because if you think that humans have always been honest with you, you're very naive. They haven't always been honest with that, because different denominations of Christianity have fought, and sometimes they fought bitterly. Sometimes they accused each other of blasphemy. And the Bible has been the child held up for ransom. And you read it with your heart, you'll get the truth. And I read the Bible, not every day, but frequently. And I always hear the voice of God when I read it. He's there. He's in it, because it was created as an instrument for his presence. And I honor the fact that through the millennia, it has brought forth his presence into humanity. I hope that helped.
Wow. I think you just delivered your seminar right there. So I would take that little clip and cut it out and stick it on your website and listen to it and say, do I need to say anything more if I ever was going to have a seminar on the Bible?
Okay.
And you might just simply say, hey, that's good.
Yeah. Well, I just need to take a photograph of my old Bible and maybe get four or five more that were translated in different styles. And, you know, our human conformity just exceeded the truth of God. And that, to me, is bitter medicine.
That's why we're a learning school, right? A learning school called Earth.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, I went on way too long, so I just need to ask you, did you want a blessing?
For two people, one would be my housemate, Cindy. She's got some physical things that could definitely use a little love and care. And then for her husband, Brian, who's a magnificent gentleman, but he's had a couple of accidental things that took place at his place of employment. And I just wish that everybody involved could see the higher spirit and get a little bit of love, and basically help them, settle down the peace. So, and that's it.
Oh, good.
And I thank you all, good. And thank you much for taking the time to go do that. Thank you, Glenda. Thank you, Nancy.
All right. Many blessings to you.
Okay, Glenda, we're going to just wrap up with Stormy. Hi, Stormy. You'll take us out to our blessing.
Yes, I'll wrap it up here, Glenda. There is a truth that I have learned to know of at least a little bit, and that is you, and that is me.
Amen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
God bless you, Stormy. From now to eternity, God bless you.
Oh, I have been. And that's my first name, yeah. Ben.
Ben.
That's
hey.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
I always remember that when you put that little Ben in there. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Next.
Bless you, Stormy. Thank you. We are the truth, you and me. So, Glenda, our board is clear. What a wonderful day together. I think we're ready to move into our blessing here today.
Okay. I stepped outside to have just a little bit of fresh air while we were doing that, so I'm coming back to my computer now. And while I'm doing that, I want everybody to get moving a little bit, just whatever you can move, even if it's only fingers. Get things moving. Yes, we do need peace and stillness and quietness to receive the peace and blessings of God, but right now we want to get some energy flowing through us, because this blessing from Yeshua and the Holy Spirit is going to come through you energetically. Now, it won't be a frequency that you feel as any form of vibration, but if you had the right instrument, it would be detectable as energy. Larry, my late husband, conducted the energy of the Holy Spirit, and it was a very palpable feeling when he did. And I have known numbers of people in my past spiritual life who could accelerate it to the point that it was palpable. Some of you may feel it that way. Most of you will not, but it's still energy. So let's move whatever we can, fingers, toes, feet, move them back and forth to stretch your lower leg. Lift your lower leg if you can, to stretch and activate your thigh region. Move your hip to get the lower part of your torso moving, flowing, lubricated, and ready to move some energy through it. And move your waist, your body at the waistline, where it's really the most movable from left to right. Turn your shoulders to the right, then turn them to the left, and move your face to the right and then to the left. Feel your neck move, your shoulder move, and move your head a little bit up and down. Bend forward, lean back. Whatever movement works for you and feels good, this is not gym work. This is feel good work. I want you to get your body just moving. It gets your lymphatic system. Your lymphatic system will actually not move if you don't move. And this is one of the great hazards of becoming a virtually immobilized person. Their immune system declines significantly. Your heart needs to be moving the blood through your arteries, and through that flow, you keep your arteries and your veins clean and clear, and you clear your body out of toxins. You carry oxygen to all parts of your body through oxygenated blood. You've got to have movement, my friends. And there's lots of ways of getting movement without doing Pilates or yoga or workouts or even walking. Walking's a good thing. It's a very good thing, even if you just walk down the block and back, because the left-right motion of walking restores balance to your body. It restores balance to your brain and to your breathing. So many of our organs exist left and right, two by two. And you need to have that balance throughout your body. So let's take a very deep breath. Inhale. Expand your lungs. Move that breath up into your sinuses. Hold it a second and now blow it out through your mouth. We like to inhale through our nose because it distributes the air more equally between your sinuses and your lungs. It gets it to all the places that need air. And it also elevates your lungs. When you breathe in through your nose, do you notice that your lungs or the area in your chest is actually elevates? Well, as you elevate your lungs, you create more space in your lungs. Because when you're relaxed, it's kind of like sitting on a stool. You know, you melt into the stool. So when your lungs are relaxed, they just kind of fall in on themselves. You breathe through your nose, and you pull all of that up. You're pulling, you know, you're pulling your chest up, and that opens your lungs to receive more. So let's do it some more times. Breathe through your nose, pull it up, hold it. Now blow it out. We blow it out because your throat and your mouth can exhale more volume, and you eliminate a lot of stuff that you may have actually accumulated in your lungs or your sinuses or your throat. And you stimulate your blood to acquire more oxygen. Have you ever noticed that as you breathe deeply, or you breathe for a few minutes regularly, your attention and your senses become brighter? That is because you have more oxygen to work with. And in our blessing protocol, this is the beginning of receiving. We are by nature givers. We love to give. We love to do. We love to offer. We love to share our ideas. There's so many, many ways of being a giver. We love to give. We love to talk. Okay. And it's quite amazing how many wonderful people don't know how to receive. With breathing, you got no choice. You breathe out, you gotta breathe in. Your autonomic nervous system tells you to do it and won't allow you not to do it. So, we developed something, well, it's not original. I did learn this from a couple of other, breathing practices. So I won't take credit for it, but it's a good thing to do. And it's relatively new for me to share with you. So if you haven't been here before, I'll go through it real quickly. It's called the four square breath because you're going to breathe to the count of four, pause to the count of four, then breathe to the count of four. Okay, but when I say breathe, you will exhale to the count of four. And it's your count of four, fast or slow, whatever you want. And then you're going to take the same amount of time to pause before you inhale. And you're going to inhale to the count of four and pause to the count of four. This is mindful breath. You are aware of your breath. You're focusing on your breath. And you're being accountable for what your breath is giving or receiving. And it's such a great model for life. Because let's face it, if you give and you don't wait for it to be received, what was the value of the gift? And then you receive, but you don't take a moment to assimilate or appreciate what you received. What's the point of receiving? You see, all of life is about giving, allowing it to be received. Then you receive back, appreciating, honoring, incorporating into your life, and then giving again. This is the rhythm of life. And you can actually pretty much stall, if not completely end, a panic attack by doing this. It's better than breathing into a bag, because breathing into a bag doesn't always work. You're just controlling the amount of CO2 you're breathing. And it can help. But this can actually completely get you ready to take an exam, to enter a conference, to speak with somebody that you feel is a challenging person, or any situation that you want to be at your very best in. Just take a little minute. Just a few minutes to do the four square breath. So let's do it now. And I'll wait for you to do it on your count. And then while you're continuing to do it, I will offer an invocation to Yeshua. All right? Dear Yeshua, the love of my life, the Lord of my life, thank you. Thank you for everything. Thank you for this opportunity I have to serve you and to offer your messages, your love, your confidence and care to others. For us to know that you are always there and we are always cared for by you. I ask that you be with every person on this call and everyone they love and care about and all of their prayers at this moment, for they are in their hearts with you. Help them to see you, to feel you, just as you helped me to see and feel you and listen to you. You changed my life. I ask that you change theirs, that you simply be with them, and they know it. In that same spirit, I ask that you be with all of us, globally, that we may come together in our light and our love
to be here and love one another, that we may coexist in peace and we may coexist in reverence of God. Love of nature and the bounties it brings to us. That we may see the beauty of structure and also appreciate its limitations compared to the greater power of life, of love, and God. Just help us to be wise. If we could just be wise, we could know how love distributes its bounties through life. And we especially ask that those bounties be distributed to the children of this world. Our new generation coming on, how frightened so many of them are, how hungry others of them are. We ask that their needs be met. For in them is a future that can be bountiful and beautiful. For the history of humankind, for the future of us all, we ask that they be blessed, officially. And we ask for your honor and blessings upon those who live the best life they could. And they're ready to say, Lord, bring me home. I did my best. And I seek to serve you forever and ever in eternity. Amen. All of these things we ask in your holy name, your precious name. Amen. Blessing givers, will you join me now in offering the blessing?
I'm in. I'm in. And I'm in. Your blessing has been given. And now you need to continue receiving. Stay in a receiving mode for at least 7 minutes by lying down and just being horizontal, where nothing is above anything else. Be a blank slate upon which the will of God can be written. The gifts and the love of God can be spelled out for your benefit and your blessing. Amen. Look forward to being with you again next week. Come, bring your friends. It's always free. Bye-bye.